KUT and KUTX listeners, the stream you've connected to is going silent on April 20th. You're likely using an old bookmark, app, or link that's been around a long time. Please visit kut.org/streams. That's kut.org/streams for more information. If you're still hearing this message next time you listen, there's a form at the bottom of that page that you can fill in for help. Our websites, apps, and npr.org are updated, so you can tune in there. Thank you for listening and supporting our stations.
This is KUT
Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT Weekend for the third weekend of November 2019. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5, the NPR station in Austin, Texas. Here's what we got for you this week. The city of Austin decides to spend $8 million to buy and rehab a motel to house the homeless.
I can assure the people in that community that the support needed for people experiencing homelessness, they'll be moving inside, will be present.
Austin's first Latina city council member says she will not seek re-election.
I think it's important that the person that represents that district is a Latino. I really do.
And activists knock on doors to rally voters around fixing the state's high uninsured rate.
Advocacy organizations really feel like enough is enough.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend. The first public hearings in the impeachment inquiry into President Trump started this week. We carried the hearings live in their entirety on KUT. We wanted to hear what some people in Austin thought about the inquiry. Most of those we encountered on the street were not interested in speaking about it, at least not into a reporter's microphone.
I'm just out here trying to talk to people about the impeachment inquiry, if you have any thoughts.
Yeah, I think right now it's not the right time for me to do that. But
I'm not interested in that.
I don't have no comment on nothing. Just pray to my Father God.
No, I don't have any thoughts on it.
I don't really go into that kind of stuff, so.
No, I don't do politics.
Okay. All right, well, thanks anyway.
Okay.
But a few people were open to sharing their thoughts.
I really don't like what he's done. I think he needs to be impeached. But I understand the other side saying that we do a lot of diplomacy and we do a lot of withholding aid and stuff like that. But for political purposes, it just seems like it's gross. It's way far out from what I've seen in the past. And I'm really disappointed.
I just don't believe it's going to happen. I think a lot of the Democratic Party wants it to happen just because they might disagree with a lot of what Trump is doing. But I don't think they're going to get what they want.
I'm sure in his mind it all makes sense and you know, along the lines of withholding aid and, you know, getting the best business deal possible and all of that. And I think in terms of our country and political gain is not within the realm of, or I think it's outside the law.
From what I've heard so far, maybe what the president is accused of doing certainly doesn't sound appropriate. I don't really know if it's a high crime or misdemeanor, but it doesn't sound appropriate. And so I worry that by using these constitutionally prescribed procedures like impeachment, where we don't necessarily have clear cases of criminal wrongdoing, might put future administrations in, you know, in a difficult balance.
I don't know. I mean, I think that it needs to happen. And I feel like that it's just feels like this should have been done a long time ago.
Well, I think it's great. I think the guy needs to go. I mean, what he's done clearly is wrong. And I just think it's time for everybody to look at it objectively and judge it nonpartisanly. And let's do what's right.
Those people in order were Stephanie Shearer, Taylor Smith, Rob Shaw, Michael Steele, Amanda Hickey, and David Langenfeld. The impeachment hearings in the House continue next week, and we plan to carry them live each day with an NPR special following each night at 7 to recap the day's events. The city of Austin plans to spend $8 million to buy and repurpose a roadway inn in South Austin to house people who are transitioning out of homelessness. The Austin City Council voted unanimously this week to do that. KUT's Andrew Weber has been following this. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Nathan.
Where is this roadway inn?
It is on I-35 near Oltorf, I believe between Oltorf and Royal Hill.
What is it going to be used for? Is this going to be like the Austin Resource Center for the Homeless downtown?
No, it would be a different model than the Arch. It would be what's called low barrier housing. So folks would be referred to this motel that the city will retrofit. I believe it has 87 units, and folks would not necessarily have to commit to mandatory case management like they do at the Arch now, or substance abuse treatment, but those services would be provided on site by the Ending Community Homelessness Coalition.
How long could people live there?
So minimum stay would be 90 days with the option to stay longer if necessary.
What happened to plans to build a shelter off Bannister Lane near Ben White?
The Bannister Ben White shelter was similar to the Arch, where you commit to case management. That shelter, the city decided, wasn't the best option. There was some pushback on that shelter. A lot of folks within the neighborhood said that there wasn't a lot of outreach beforehand. And that same argument has been made for the Roadway Inn today, specifically.
What are people who live near that Roadway Inn saying?
A lot of those folks said the city didn't reach out before deciding on this. And a lot of the folks said that there's already a lot of crime in the area. And one of those folks was Mark Thompson.
All of this has been primarily homeless activity. We've spoke to APD on numerous occasions. They've confirmed this, that this is homeless activity in our area. It is mostly driven by the drug trade that's going on in our area. And we actually see the police sitting out front of our unit, just watching for these drug deals happen. And by bringing in this homeless population, that is just going to explode. As Henri mentioned, we've already put in $2.5 million to improve our property, and we just feel this is going to tear apart the value of our homes and bring down the community completely.
A couple of folks made that argument, and then on the other side of the coin, Matt Malika, the relatively new head of the Ending Community Homelessness Coalition, argued that a lot of the discussions surrounding these sorts of decisions are based in what he called NIMBYism. He said he welcomed the discussion and that his group is going to manage the site and that they would be available if neighbors have concerns.
I believe everybody deserves a dignified place to sleep and being inside, and we believe hotels is a good step towards that. With council approval, I can assure the people in that community that the support needed for people experiencing homelessness, they'll be moving inside, will be present. Will be active in that community, and I'd be happy to be available to the neighborhood association there to answer any questions or have discussions about how the services might be provided.
Have any other cities done this, Andrew?
Yes, actually, Matt Malika, who used to work for the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless, did it a couple times in Denver, and he worked for a nonprofit in San Francisco as well that did the same sort of model, and they found that it was pretty successful and largely pretty cost effective. Having said that, there is the whole timeline argument of this that neighbors spoke to, that they were concerned that the city kind of rushed this. And Allison Alter, council member for District 7, echoed that concern.
We need to make some investments. We are operating within a real estate market that works very quickly. And so we have to make decisions if we want to buy properties on a pace that, as an elected official who would like us to have more engagement, is rather uncomfortable.
KUT's Andrew Weber reporting on the Austin City Council voting unanimously to spend $8 million to buy and repurpose a Roadway Inn on South I-35 between Oltorf and Royal Hill Drive to house people who are transitioning out of homelessness. Andrew, thanks so much.
Thank you, Nathan.
The University of Texas System Board of Regents approved a tuition hike this week, 2.6% for next academic year and the year after. At UT Austin, that amounts to an increase next year of just under $290, and the year after that, another increase of just over $290. UT officials cited several reasons for the increase, including inflation and declining financial support from the state. Students Celia Perez and David Chun were standing outside on the UT Austin campus, and I asked them for their reaction.
UT has the most loyal students, but UT shows no loyalty to its students. It's true, though.
It's a state school. I mean, most people come here because they don't have as much money for like a smaller college.
UT's so rich. UT is so rich.
It's the second richest school behind Harvard University. Like, what's the point? What's the point?
data compiled by Bloomberg News last December found UT's endowment grew to $31 billion, making it second only to Harvard University among higher education institutions in the United States. Texas is still the fastest growing state in the country, and as KUT's Samuel King reports, the state demographer says that population growth continues to put a strain on infrastructure.
State demographer Lloyd Potter says Texas continues to grow at a rate of about 1,000 people a day. About half of that is people who move here from out of state. He says that migration has an instant impact on infrastructure as more capacity is needed to accommodate more drivers. Much of that growth is centered in the counties along and east of I-35. Potter told the Texas Transportation Commission that growth is adding to commute times in the corridor.
And it puts increasing pressure for people to move further and further out because property values are increasing and it's more expensive for people to live in the urban cores.
Potter projects the state will grow to 47.4 million people by 2050, up from almost 29 million now. The Texas Department of Transportation is using the projections to help plan new road and other mobility projects. Samuel King, KUT News.
The Austin Independent School District's Board of Trustees will be voting on school boundary changes in Southwest Austin on Monday. KUT's Claire McInerney explains these proposed changes.
Southwest Austin has been growing a lot in the last few years, which has led to school overcrowding. To alleviate this, AISD is building a new elementary school in the area. So the district asked its Boundary Advisory Committee, a group of community volunteers, to redraw boundaries in the area, to zone kids to the new school, and help relieve overcrowding at other schools. This committee submitted a recommendation that changed boundaries slightly, but Superintendent Paul Cruz submitted his own proposal that changed boundaries more dramatically. The board will consider both plans on Monday and approve one. You can read a lot more about this issue and a story we have at KUT.org. Claire McInerney, KUT News.
Well, the risk of wildfire in Central Texas has gone down in the past few weeks, thankfully, mainly because we got a bunch of rain, although we are still below normal rainfall amounts for this time of year. But a recent report of cities facing the greatest wildfire risk ranked Austin at number 5 nationwide. All the cities above us were in California, which has been dealing with another devastating year of wildfires. So with more development popping up in the once wild spaces around Austin, a lot of people are worried that not enough is being done to prepare for the next wildfire disaster here. The Texas Standard's Jill Ament brings us that story.
I met Austin resident Randy Jameson at a busy cafe in a strip mall near his neighborhood in northwest Austin. He lives in River Place, what developers call a master planned community. The neighborhood is home to about 4,000 people and was recently annexed by the city of Austin. Located near Lake Travis, homes here are sought for their hill country and lakeside views. But Jameson's not meeting with me to tell me how much he likes living in this area. He's meeting with me to tell me how nervous he is about living out here.
My anxiety goes pretty sky high when it's hot and dry. We're in a tinderbox.
River Place and several communities nearby face some of the highest risk of catastrophic wildfires in the Austin area. And an audit released in late October by the city of Austin indicated the city isn't doing enough to prepare for wildfires.
Drivers and passengers looked worried as they surveyed the clouds of smoke ahead, stretching for miles.
In 2011, Texas was in the middle of a historic drought. That Labor Day weekend, conditions were ripe for wildfires, very dry and very windy. 9 major wildfires broke out in several places surrounding Austin. The most significant was the Bastrop Complex fire near Bastrop, Texas. That fire destroyed 32,000 acres, 1,600 homes, and killed 2 people. Closer to Randy Jameson's River Place neighborhood, a wildfire in Steiner Ranch destroyed more than 20 homes.
We stood on the crest on River Place Boulevard looking across at Steiner Ranch and wondering if the fire was going to continue coming towards River Place.
No one was killed in the Steiner Ranch fire, but there's only one way into the community and one way out. That led to some serious evacuation problems. Jameson says it wasn't until those wildfires broke out that he started to realize the risks in River Place.
There's a school. There's the Austin Christian Fellowship Church.
Jameson points out how close homes and businesses are to each other as we drive around his neighborhood. He says he no longer looks at the plants and trees, steep hills and cliffs that are common in this area as aesthetics, but instead components that could easily fuel wildfires. And like Steiner Ranch, Jameson's community is also hard to get in and out of. The main entrance and exit pours out onto a notoriously windy and congested road in that area.
Yeah, it's a congestion. It's already a congestion, but it's a congestion with density waiting for a disaster. It's creating one.
The wildfire outbreak nearly a decade ago served as a wake-up call for the city of Austin. A year later, the city established a wildfire division within its fire department. This division's goal? Reduce the risk of wildfire destruction in Austin. To do this, they mapped out Austin's wildland-urban interface. Think a floodplain map, but for wildfires. This map is commonly referred to as a WUI.
The basic definition is just where human infrastructure meets, you know, wildland habitat.
That's Carrie Hines. She's a WUI expert at the Texas A&M Forest Service.
So anywhere that you could have a wildfire burning that comes into contact with human structures.
The WUI pinpoints which part of a city is at the most risk for catastrophic wildfire damage. Austin's Public Safety Commission says 61% of Austin's homes, businesses, and roads are close to areas that could pose a wildfire risk. After the wildfire outbreak around Austin, city leaders began discussing adopting citywide WUI codes. These are like fire codes, but for wildfires.
The codes look at how dense an area can be built out to, where people can build structures, what building materials can be used, how you manage your vegetation, both natural vegetation and what you plant around your house. Access for emergency vehicles is another really big one.
Hines says adopting these wildfire codes are one of the more effective ways cities sprawling out into their wild spaces can develop safely. The city of Austin has yet to adopt wildfire codes, and in that city audit released late last month, putting these codes in place was listed as the number one priority. Austin City Council member Allison Alter says that's a sign the city could still be doing more to address its wildfire risk.
You know, Austin's an interesting case. On one hand, we are leaders in wildfire and that we created a wildfire division and we have some resources that are devoted to it. But there's a serious question about whether we are doing enough given the hazards that we face.
Alter says from a building perspective, there can be concerns because wildfire codes cost developers more money. Plus, there's the question of how much taxpayers will have to pay. She thinks the cost of not putting these codes in place, though, could be even greater.
We know that the next major wildfire in Austin is not a question of if, but when. And we really need to be zeroing in and making sure that we're doing everything that we can.
A majority of the Austin City Council greenlit plans for a development of about 20 homes in a part of the River Place neighborhood that's at a severe wildfire risk. A spokesperson for the developer says they do plan to build the homes with wildfire codes in mind. Still, no citywide codes are yet in place. That could change soon. Austin City Council members are expected to take up a proposal for wildfire codes at the end of the year. Reporting in Austin, I'm Jill Ament for the Texas Standard.
Austin's first Latina mayor pro tem says she will not seek re-election next year. City Councilmember Delia Garza from District 2 in Southeast Austin was elected to the council in 2014 as part of the first group of representatives under the new 10-1 form of city government, 10 council members and one mayor. So KUT's Audrey McGlinchey has been covering this for us. Hello, Audrey.
Hi, Nathan.
Why is Councilmember Garza not going to seek re-election?
That's a great question. We don't really know exactly. The reasoning that she gave was that she wanted to leave space for other candidates wanting to fill her spot to begin their campaigns. But yeah, there are other ideas that people have.
And I want to ask you about those too, because where did the idea come that she might be running for
Travis County attorney.
So in July, a couple folks, including council member Greg Kassar, who is a friend and colleague of Garza, filed a PAC, so basically an entity that could allow them to start raising money in order to elect her to be the next Travis County attorney, meaning that she has about 3 weeks to file.
I will make a decision by the end of the year. I'm seriously considering it.
How would that work if she wanted to run for the post of Travis County attorney, which we should specify is different than Travis County district attorney. Mm-hmm. Travis County attorney deals with misdemeanor cases. But if she were to run for the Travis County attorney, would she have to quit her job as a city council member?
So it depends on timing per the state constitution. So basically she would have a window of a few days, about 3, 4, 5 days before that December 9th filing deadline in which she could file to run for this new office and keep her job. But if she filed before that small window, then she would have to resign immediately.
Why is there such a small window of time?
So the state constitution is actually an amendment to the state constitution that voters passed in 2011, but it limited that vacancy to a year and 30 days. So if she officially announces her candidacy for a new office before that year and 30-day window, then she has to immediately resign, and we would elect someone new to fill that spot. If she announces it within that time period, then she would maintain her seat for the rest of the term.
Wow. So there really is just a few days there where she has to...
Per my calculations, we don't have the official inauguration date for 2021. So we don't have the official date for the end of her term, but it's usually that first week of January. In the past couple of years, it's been January 6th or 7th. So I really just worked backwards from there. And we got to about a couple days before that December 9th filing deadline.
What is her legal background?
So Mayor Pro Tem Garza, she has a varied background. She was a firefighter with the Austin Fire Department, which is a role that her father had as well. She has a law degree, and she served as an assistant attorney general in the Attorney General's Office of Texas, yes.
Back to her not seeking re-election. What kind of gap would that leave in District 2? I mean, what have been her priorities? What has she mm-hmm. been fighting for since she was elected in 2014?
Well, District 2, which is Southeast Austin, so folks might know the neighborhoods of Dove Springs or Dove Valley. So this is a largely Hispanic area. So having an Hispanic council member, I think, has been very important for folks. She's definitely filled that role. And again, as you mentioned, she's the first Latina mayor pro tem.
I think it's important that the person that represents that district is a Latino. I really do.
She has really advocated for better access to childcare. A lot of her constituents are lower income. They're families. They have children. And as many parents may know, childcare in Austin is very expensive. She's also been part of the what is now a larger contingent on council that has really backed more housing in Austin, denser housing, more types of housing in Austin. She's been a big affordable housing advocate. She's also served as vice chair on the CAP Metro Board, working towards better public transportation options. She's also worked a lot to get certain services in her district that are not currently available. For example, opening another fire station. Again, she has a background as a firefighter. And then also she has worked a lot to try to get a grocery store built in Del Valle because a lot of residents there talk about how they end up driving to Buda to buy groceries. That has yet to happen, but that's something she's been working on for a while now.
If Mayor Pro Tem Delia Garza does decide to, for whatever reason, resign now and not fill out her term, then what would happen with that district?
So the city would have to call a special election, and they do not have to do this on uniform election dates. So typically we have certain dates in May and November, also in March for the primaries where we hold elections. This would not be subject to that, so we could kind of hold it whenever, probably sooner than later. So folks in District 2 could have representation. But yeah, we would have a special election.
KUT's Audrey McGlinchey telling us about Austin Mayor Pro Tem Delia Garza announcing that she does not intend to seek re-election. You can read Audrey's story about this at KUT.org. Thanks, Audrey.
Thanks, Nathan.
The Austin City Council has approved a big overhaul of local floodplain maps. These new maps put more than 7,000 additional homes and businesses in areas judged to be at higher risk of flooding. KUT's Mels Bichelle tells us what the change could mean for homeowners.
With the exception of properties near the Colorado River, the overhaul puts most places that used to be in the 500-year floodplain in the higher-risk 100-year floodplain. That means those property owners will have new restrictions on how and what they can build. But the rule change also makes it easier to permit new building in those areas as long as it's elevated above a certain level. Many homeowners in the newly designated floodplains will also now need to get flood insurance as part of their mortgage. Kevin Shunk is Austin's floodplain administrator. He says the city will be sending out notifications by mail to property owners affected by the change.
Please tell anybody you know that's in the 500 floodplain, please get a quote on flood insurance. Understand your flood risk and understand what you can do to help you and your family and your belongings be safe during this time of flood.
He says people that buy insurance now may be able to lock in lower rates before FEMA changes them in a few years. Climatologists say we can expect more flooding rains as greenhouse gas emissions from fossil fuels warm the Earth's atmosphere. Moz Bouchel, KET News.
A new miniature soccer field at the Dove Springs Recreation Center opened to the public today. It's part of the U.S. Soccer Foundation's goal to add 1,000 mini pitches across the country. KUT's Sangeeta Menon has more.
An old tennis court was resurfaced to look like a miniature soccer field ideal for little kids. The $60,000 project was led by the nonprofit Soccer Assist in partnership with the U.S. Soccer Foundation and Austin Parks and Rec. Aaron Rocklin, the co-founder of Soccer Assist, says the nonprofit's larger goal is to make it easier for kids to access places for creative and unstructured play.
We were looking to focus on an underserved, primarily Hispanic community with a high passion for the game of soccer. And when we found that area and found those partners at the Dove Springs Recreation Center and with their advisory board, it just seemed like a natural fit.
Austin FC President Andy Lochnane and Mayor Pro Tem Delia Garza will be at the grand opening ribbon cutting at 10 a.m. tomorrow. Sangeeta Menon, KUT News.
Healthcare advocates have begun organizing voters around the issue of health insurance coverage in Texas. The state has the highest uninsured rate in the country, and state lawmakers have largely done nothing to improve that standing. So advocates want to mobilize voters ahead of next election and the next legislative session in the hopes that lawmakers might pay attention. KUT's Ashley Lopez reports.
A group of about 20 people are standing around on a chilly Saturday morning in southeast Austin, preparing to knock on some doors. Shane Johnson, who is part of a left-leaning group called Indivisible Austin, reminds the group why they're there.
So 5 million Texans are uninsured. That's mind-boggling. Is this right? Is this okay?
No.
Wait. I didn't hear any emotion. No, it's not okay.
This event was one of seven across the state aimed at organizing people around one issue, Texas's high uninsured rate. That includes the highest rate among children and women of childbearing age. And all these metrics have been getting worse. Yet in the past few legislative sessions, state lawmakers have done nothing to improve the rate. For one, Texas is among a minority of states that has refused to expand Medicaid to more low-income people through the Affordable Care Act. And earlier this year, lawmakers failed to take steps to make sure children kept their coverage. That's even though advocates like Laura Garicardis with the Children's Defense Fund of Texas have been urging the legislature to take healthcare coverage seriously.
Advocacy organizations really feel like enough is enough. And if the legislature won't listen to us, then our new audience is going to be Texans, everyday Texans.
Along with the Texas Organizing Project and the Center for Public Policy Priorities, Garicardis's group launched an issues-based nonpartisan campaign. The point is to knock on doors and talk to people about the state's coverage crisis and also collect their stories about what it's like to be uninsured. Garicardis says block walking is just the beginning.
This is going to be year-round organizing, and our very next step is to take the stories that we're hearing today to our policymakers and 2020 state candidates.
Mimi Garcia and Becky Bullard were among those advocates collecting stories this past weekend, including the story of Nina Torres.
You know, do you have health insurance or health coverage?
I actually don't. And the reason why I don't is because I opened up my own business.
Torres says she's having a hard time getting coverage through her husband's employer now that she's working for herself. Garcia and Bullard suggested she look into the Obamacare marketplace, although even if she signs up immediately, that coverage won't kick in until January. In the meantime, Torres says not having coverage has been pretty stressful. She says even if she feels really sick, she tries to avoid going to the hospital or a doctor.
I wait till the very last minute unless I absolutely need to go.
And there are a lot of stories like this in Texas. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, last year almost 18% of Texans were uninsured. That's better than it was before Obamacare became law, but under the Trump administration, that rate has climbed each year. Laura Garicardis says even with that trend, it's been hard to get lawmakers to prioritize health insurance coverage.
They have to pay attention to this because us working directly with policymakers, asking them, informing them, providing them the research about the consequences of leaving so many Texans, adults and children uninsured is not working. And so if we're the wrong messengers, then maybe the people of Texas will be the right messengers.
Garicardis says about 100 people signed up to Canvas last weekend during events in San Antonio, Houston, Dallas, Austin, Galveston, McAllen, and Fort Worth. She says they plan to collect as many stories as they can in the hopes lawmakers will start to listen. Ashley Lopez, KUT News.
That is KUT Weekend for the third weekend of November 2019. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org and email any questions or comments to weekend@kut.org or just ask me on Twitter. I'm at KUT Nathan. Our theme music is by RAC. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org. ¶¶